welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The collective West's thinking about Ukraine has entered the realm of magical thinking. Somehow, more aid, military and financial, will reverse Ukraine's trajectory. One U.S. congressman has called for a Hiroshima and Nagasaki solution in Gaza and Ukraine. Desperate people with desperate ideas. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guests. In New York, we have Garland Nixon. He is a political analyst. And in Athens, we cross to Dimitri Laskaros. He is a lawyer and freelance journalist. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Garland, let me go to you. There's a lot going on right now. I'd like to talk about Tim Walberg, a congressman, saying in desperation, I would imagine, what other state of mind are you when you're calling for nuking countries that your proxies are not doing well? I mean, this is magical thinking. This is desperate thinking. And because people are thinking desperately, we can expect some desperate actions. I want to talk about the attack on the concert hall a little bit later. But, you know, Tim Walberg, he's not a really smart guy, but it's dangerous.
And, you know, the reality is we don't know. He may be an extremely intelligent person, but we're not talking about intellect here. We're talking about a state of mind. When a psychiatrist is evaluating a person's mental capacity and mental state of mental health, one of the things they want to know is, what is your internal conversation? What is that voice inside your head saying? It can be extremely unhealthy. When I listen to the politicians in the United States, I think what I'm hearing is the internal voice of the U.S. empire. People like Tim Walberg represent the dysfunctional thinking and the inability to comprehend reality regarding our so-called adversaries. So I think he represents a dysfunction in the U.S. empire that isn't about intellect or smarts whatsoever.
Well, I mean, okay, irrespective of that, Dimitri, those are very dangerous words. I mean, that may be your internal conversation, but he is an elected representative of the U.S. Government. So it is worth, that's why I think it's worth noting. Go ahead, Dimitri.
Well, I think what we're witnessing here is, frankly, I'm no medical expert, but it looks to me as a layperson like psychosis.
Yeah.
This person, Tim Walberg, was a Baptist pastor. He's attended apparently three evangelical schools. He holds himself out as a Christian. One can hardly think of a threat, the threat of nuking a civilian population, that is more inimical to core Christian values than this. And yet this man has no shame about calling himself a Christian and bringing the entire religion, frankly, into disrepute. He ain't no Christian. And at the end of the day, the fact that you have people in positions of power in the United States who have such a perverted understanding of who they are and what they represent is really something that ought to concern us all, Americans and non-Americans alike, very deeply.
Yeah, well, Dimitri, staying with you, Dimitri, I mean, it's we've heard a number of members of Congress say, in reference to Gaza, kill them all. We've heard that more than once from elected officials. Garland, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, the other part of it is the lack of acceptance of reality, because when he said nuke Gaza, he also said end Ukraine, by, you know, end the Ukraine conflict immediately by nuking Russia. That doesn't take into, that doesn't accept the reality that that's suicide. That what he's saying is, let's get the Ukraine conflict over by exterminating all of mankind. So that just shows you how unrealistic these people are. Like, oh, we'll just nuke Russia. No possible way that they would retaliate with a new. Yeah, it's absurd.
Well, and Dimitri, that brings us to, you know, I don't care about Walberg, okay, but it's indicative to me of some kind of change going on. Now, we can't figure out if it's a chicken or egg when we come to the terrorist attack here in Moscow on March 22nd here. But Russia's military activity in Ukraine has increased, particularly in targeting the energy structure, not the substations like it was a year ago, but the generating capacity of Ukraine, which will not be fixed for a very long time. The conflict will have to come to an end before you can repair that. Now, obviously, people that live in cities, large cities with no electricity, they're going to have to move. And, you know, you know, the timing of this, like I said, I don't know if it's a chicken or egg. There's a lot of people with strong opinions, with few facts out there. But it does look like something has changed here. Now, again, I don't know if it's a reaction to the terrorist attack. Your thoughts, Dmitry?
Well, at some point, reality catches up with illusion, and we're seeing this quite vividly in Ukraine. And the reactions on the West are, you know, anywhere from a sober assessment of the situation, like Orbán in Hungary and the recently elected Slovakian leader, to outright insanity, like Emmanuel Macron, who thinks that by sending 2,000-some-odd soldiers into Ukraine and watching them be obliterated within a matter of weeks, if not days, he's somehow going to change the balance of power. So at least we have in the West some voices of reason. And by the way, they're the ones who in the mainstream are most marginalized and vilified over and over again. But at this stage, it's anybody's guess as to where this is going to go. You see people like, you know, Tim Walberg. And by the way, I just want to say, you know, to go back to the point you were making earlier, that depravity in the United States is bipartisan. You know, Stuart Seldowitz,
yep,
the former Obama official, who said that if we killed 4,000 Palestinian children, it ain't enough. And of course, the president who's making all of this depravity possible is a Democrat, and he's supported enthusiastically, even more so by Republicans than by people in his own party. So the entire political class in the United States at this stage is an existential threat to humanity from my perspective. But let's hope that the voices of reason in the West, because there are few, albeit precious few, will prevail in the end.
Well, we certainly hope so, and I think it's present company. I usually don't do a collective pat on the back, but I think it's appropriate right now. Garland, according to the Russian military Ministry of Defense, Kiev has lost more than 80,000 troops since January. And Macron wants to send his own? I mean, what magical thinking world is he in, Garland?
Well, I think that, again, what he represents is the absurd thinking and the inability to really address reality by the Western leaders. What he's basically saying is something that would work for domestic politics. It would work for the elite ruling class that he's in. But on the actual battlefield, it would make no difference other than to get his troops annihilated. So what we're looking at is another example of Western leaders who live in a narrative and politically based a world. What he's doing from the perspective of a narrative, from the perspective of a discussion, it works. But in as far as kinetic warfare, it's absurd, but we see that he can't tell the difference.
Well, he's talking to other elites. That's what's going on here. Let's move to the terrorist attack in Moscow at the end of last month. Dmitry, it seems to me, because we follow this very closely, obviously, this was a terrorist attack, but it's not the first one that's been committed against Russia that has come from Ukraine. I mean, this seems to be an escalation of terror because we have more and more cases from Ukraine where civilians are attacked in Russia. The target is obviously plainly civilian. I think that, you know, the terrorist attack on Moscow is an extension of that. I think that makes logical sense, Dmitry.
Yeah, and let's just focus here on what we know from the public record, and I'm going to rely on Western sources so nobody can question whether these sources are biased or not. Amnesty International has documented the fact that the Ukrainian regime used cluster munitions,
yep,
in Izium and also in Donetsk, of course. And we know from Western human rights organizations that Russian soldiers who had been captured early in the conflict were tortured, shot in the knees. And let's talk for a moment about Nord Stream. Initially, the reflexive reaction of Western elites was that Russia blew up its own pipeline, which was a preposterous theory on its face, especially because Biden had only months earlier vowed to bring an end to Nord Stream if Russia invaded Ukraine. But then the narrative gradually shifted after Seymour Hersh's investigative piece came out, and he pointed the finger squarely at the Biden administration. And now major media organizations in the West are saying that it was Ukrainian elements did it, albeit without the knowledge of Zelensky. So in effect, even Western media organizations are accusing the Ukrainian regime or elements within it of having committed this act of environmental terrorism against the Nord Stream pipeline.
But if we go back a few weeks ago, and I want Garland to address this as well, we had that really huge story come out of the New York Times about how the CIA, MI6, had just completely redone Ukrainian intelligence. So this is at a time when Nord Stream was blown up. So you can't have it both ways. You know, you're involved or you're not involved here. And in the New York Times, they've had better days. They didn't see the fallacy in their argument. Dmitry.
If what you are suggesting is that there's likely to have been complicity from Western intelligence agencies, I agree completely. It's so difficult to believe that the United States would give all of this military support and economic aid to Israel without, to Ukraine, without exacting a price. The price is we will control the conduct of this war. They're not doing this out of the generosity of their hearts. So I think the operating assumption should be that if the evidence points to Ukrainian involvement, and there does appear to be significant evidence supporting that hypothesis, that some Western intelligence agency or agencies were behind it. And this is perfectly consistent with their past behavior. I mean, let's look again at what's happening in Gaza. This, by any rational definition of terrorism, is state-sponsored terrorism, and it's the United States that's making it possible. There is no limit to what the Western governments are prepared to do to advance their project of global hegemony. So they're perfectly capable of having helped the Ukrainian regime orchestrate this heinous attack in Moscow.
Well, Garland, particularly since there's a long history of Islamist fundamentalists, jihadists, involved with the Ukrainian government since 2014 after the coup.
And there's a long history of jihadists being involved with the U.S. government for, you know, decades, literally now. So when you look at it, as Dmitry said, the two most prominent terrorist attacks since the start of the special military operation are, number one, Nord Stream. And immediately after, the United States had no idea what happened, but they knew that they did not want an investigation. That's the one thing they knew. They couldn't possibly have an investigation on it. And now, immediately after this happens, the U.S. wasn't involved, but they know who did it, and they know who didn't do it, and they kind of predicted it, just like the Nord Stream. Well, we think this could happen. It happens exactly like they said it would happen, but they know who did it, they know who didn't do it, but other than that, they have no, you know,
it's
involvement.
At the end of the day, it's just pretty sloppy stuff that's hard to believe. Gentlemen, I'm going to go to a hard break here, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Dmitry in Athens. Garland already mentioned in the first part of the program, but I want to go a little bit further here. So let me get this straight. A little after an hour after the attack on the concert hall, the U.S. says that Ukraine wasn't involved in it. Nord Stream, the biggest ecological disaster ever, nobody knows how it happened. It's really quite remarkable. But Dmitry, if you were an 86-year-old woman with purple hair with a walker and you were 150 miles around anywhere close to the U.S. Capitol, they know who you are. How do you explain all these inconsistencies, Dmitry?
They'll make the intelligence or lack thereof fit whatever narrative serves their hegemonic purposes. And, you know, I want to say something about this ISIS theory. In the last 6 months or so, this organization, it is claimed by the West, has committed two huge terrorist attacks. One, of course, was Moscow, and the other one was Iran, where there was a bombing that killed over 100 people. Now, this organization is supposed to be an organization of Muslim extremists. It seems to me that if you're a Muslim extremist, there's nobody you should be angrier with right now than the United States and Israel, who are obliterating a largely Muslim population in Gaza. Why has ISIS decided at this particular moment to turn its wrath on Russians and Iranians rather than Americans?
Or Dmitry said differently, why is ISIS or ISIS-K or whatever variant, why are they fighting on behalf of the United States to pursue American and Israeli goals? Is that what you're saying?
Precisely. I mean, that's certainly the effect of what they're doing. And we can only infer that that's what they are trying to do. I just spent, by the way, 3 days in Baghdad speaking to people here who fought against ISIS, you know, who actually put their lives on the line to fight against ISIS. And they're all convinced that ISIS is a creation of the United States because its activities in Iraq consistently served the United States agenda. So at a certain point in time, you say it is the most plausible inference that somehow the United States orchestrates the activities of this organization.
Well, Garland, going back to the terrorist attack here in Moscow, I mean, so you a 48-hour warning, a general warning, but that's as far as it went? I mean, if you were so quick to say who did do it, then you must have had other information before and probably after having that kind of intel. Now, it's going to be, now it gets on to he said, she said, okay, we gave the Russians the information. The Russians said we got a general warning. There wasn't anything to go on. That will be argued until the end of time, okay? But if you come out so quickly and say, you know, who didn't do it, well, that's kind of suspect, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You have a little too bit too much information to not to be involved, to know who didn't. There's only one way to know who didn't do it. And that is, you have to know who did do it, or you have to have some kind of an alibi. But Ukraine has a broad array of terrorist options, and we see that in that they use this neo-Nazi so-called quasi-Russian group to attack the border. So they've been using various options, internal security, people in Russia, et cetera. So it only makes sense that they would use another option in the same way that the United States uses Ukraine to hide, shall we say, their fingerprints at the crime scene. They further then use ISIS-K or some Russian neo-Nazi group to kind of put a little distance between themselves and Ukraine and whoever does the perpetrates the final act.
Well, let's change gears slightly. Dimitri, a Speaker of the House Johnson said that he's going to present some kind of spending bill regarding Ukraine. We don't know the amount. We know if it's going to be lend-lease, it's going to be loans. We don't know. But it seems that it will end up on the floor of the Congress here. Interesting to note here, will the Democrats save him? Because there's a number of Republicans that will not go along with it, and he could lose his position as Speaker. This is going to be a very interesting gambit, having a Republican Speaker of the House giving Biden a victory in an election year. Interesting.
And very dangerous for the political future of the current Speaker. We saw with the prior Speaker, the fate that he suffered when he was seen to be too cooperative with the Biden administration's agenda. But at the end of the day, whatever amount of money they cough up and throw at the Zelensky regime, there's absolutely no reason to believe that this is going to alter the military reality on the ground. One of the reasons, many reasons that's true, is Ukraine is running out of men to do the fighting. They've suffered catastrophic losses on the battlefield. And secondly, any weapons that are going to be delivered will have to be produced once the money is in fact authorized by Congress. And by that time, you know, it may well be over. Yeah. And the thing which is a definitive sign of where this is all heading is that Zelensky, after taking for 2 years, a maximalist approach to negotiating with Russia, saying there must be a complete withdrawal from all 1991 territory of Ukraine. Vladimir Putin must be held accountable for the allegations against him from the decrepit ICC and so forth. All of a sudden, he's making commitments to preserve the neutrality of Ukraine.
Well, if Zelensky were to say something like that, soften his position, he doesn't have to worry about Russians. He has to worry about people around him. You know what I mean, Dimitri.
Precisely. The extremists will probably not tolerate any kind of a concession to Russia. So, you know, Zelensky is in a world of pain. And I think, you know, one thing we can say with confidence is his days as leader of Ukraine are numbered.
Okay, you know, Garland, according to press reports here, particularly from President Putin himself, that those who were involved in the terrorist attack, no matter where they are, whatever position they hold, they will be held accountable. Well, you know, it doesn't take a big leap of logic that if Ukrainian officials were involved in that, then they're on a list of sorts. Garland.
Well, I don't expect President Putin to take any action that would endanger the Russian people, you know, such as attacking the United States or the UK.
Oh, no.
Like
what I'm talking about the Ukrainian elite.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Ukrainian elite.
Exactly. Yes. I suspect that what would happen at this point is they're going to say, look, at some point we're going to win this conflict. And when we do, there will be trials. People will be held accountable. And these will be charges that will be put forth. I would suspect that what the Russians will do is submit a certain amount of evidence to the international community, maybe even go to the UN, the International Criminal Court or something, and present their case. But I think what they'll be saying is, when this thing is over, there's going to be some trials, and we're going to eventually, you know, you're putting us in a position where we're going to have to take this country, and we're going to hold people accountable in some sort of trials, a Nuremberg-style trials for these people. I think that's the most likely thing that will be planned.
Well, and also, Garland, I really hope that all of the atrocities committed against the people of the Donbass 8 years before this part of the conflict started, I hope they're held accountable, too. You know, Dmitry, it's very interesting. The three of us and our viewers have been watching this conflict very closely since 2014. Let me repeat that, 2014. But the West is so afraid of peace. Why?
Well, let's distinguish between the peoples of the West and those who rule them. I think that there is broad-based support, and always has been, except in perhaps moments of patriotic insanity, like in the aftermath of 9/11, for peace. People generally do not want war and all of the horrors that that brings upon them. But unfortunately, through our rigged electoral system, not just in the United States, now it's in virtually every country in the West, we suffer from rigged elections. You end up with people in power who are much more concerned about maintaining their own privilege and wealth and hegemony rather than serving the interests of their supposed constituents. And this is now the situation that we in the West sadly must contend with. We want peace. By and large, at the level of ordinary citizens, our leaders want nothing but war.
You know, Garland, I don't know if it's still on track because Benjamin Netanyahu had a minor surgery over the weekend, but I think he's still on the list to address Congress here. I have this idea that once he's in the House of Congress, then they should lock the doors and arrest everybody in the room. What do you think? For war,
crimes. Yeah, absolutely. Because what we're looking at is, you know, a systemic system of war crimes. You know, I think that the what's happening in Ukraine and the conflict in Gaza are inextricably linked in that, you know, the United States has created these twin monsters, these Frankenstein monsters, as have been said. And now the United States is paying the price. But what's going on here in reality, if we get down to it, is desperation. The ruling elite in the United States since 2008 have come to the reality, you know, are coming to grips with the reality that their system is decadent, their system is flawed and self-centered, and it doesn't work for the masses, and that things are falling apart. They're losing their power. And so now they're desperately trying everything they can to suppress the other rising world powers who are doing it right, who are industrializing, who are actually delivering for the people in their country, as is represented by the election in Russia and the polls that show that over 90% of the Chinese people support their government. And they're in desperation, just simply trying to, you know, do a Tanya Harding, a pipe to the knees of their adversaries, rather than try to improve their decadent crashing system so that they can survive.
Yeah, Dmitry, the rules-based order came to an end shortly after it was introduced here. Blinken, the Secretary of State, I call him the Undertaker. That's his favorite phrase. But it's true. I mean, look at him. He looks really dour. I mean, all the blood is out of his face, okay? He always looks down when he talks, which means he's lying, okay? And his rules-based order has died with him. Dmitry.
Yeah, and we still haven't figured out what it means.
Yeah, I've never figured out what it meant.
Yeah, that's the intent.
My best interpretation of it, and I'm just having to draw inferences here, is that the rules apply to you, but they don't apply to us. That's basically the rules-based order.
Well, Dmitry, also, it is an alternative to international law. It's a sleight of hand. We rules-based order versus international law. That's what they want, but they'll never say it that way.
Absolutely. And the rules, their conception of the rules are based upon the false premise that Western elites are superior to governments of the non-Western world. If ever we had evidence that the converse is true, that the best governments today are to be found in the non-Western world rather than in the Western world, we have it. We have it by looking at how, you know, the Russian economy is performing much better than the major economies of the West. We have it in terms of the the incredible achievement of the Chinese government of lifting hundreds of millions of Chinese out of poverty. And Garland mentioned the levels of support in China for their government.
Well,
also,
you're absolutely right. They're fighting for their privilege and their power, and we can see through them. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in New York and in Athens. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.